Halo, halo, Sacred Icon listeners. We used to do ads for other people, but I decided, why don't we do one for ourselves? Whether you're here listening to us for the first time or you've heard every episode, I'd like to briefly tell you what we're about and how you can support us. We have been doing this podcast since 2019, and with that has come lots of changes. We started as a primarily Halo-only show, but have evolved, combat evolved, over the years to talk about a wide variety of things in the realm of nerd culture. As you can imagine, we've made numerous changes to our platforms, usernames, and emails over the years, so now is the time for me to set things right and give the Covenant back their bomb. You can join our Discord by clicking the link included on our podcast feed. You can also send us an email or a voice message at sacrediconpodcast@gmail.com. We have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/sacredicon, and we no longer use Twitter or X or whatever else the kids are calling it these days. So if you see someone who looks like us there, just know it's not us. Lastly, you can support us on patreon.com/sacredicon and receive a bevy of bonus content. We're so glad you chose us to be the voice in your ear on this particular day and hope you enjoy the episode ahead.
What's good, everybody? How you doing? It's a Dune episode, everybody. Welcome back to another episode
Dune of the
Sacred Icon Podcast. That's right, you know it, baby. 3 years ago, we did an episode on the Denis Villeneuve, I'm mispronouncing it, but I don't care, Dune movie that came out, and we are back again to talk about Dune Part 2, or as we like to call it, Dune 2, doing it again. How you doing? How you doing, Brian?
Huh? Did you come up with that, Josh? Because everyone's using it now.
I arrived at it. No, I did not arrive at it independently. I saw it somewhere, but I could not place where.
It's definitely caught on in the Discord and everything. So,
yeah. I'm flattered vicariously.
All right, let's just get right into it, guys.
Right into it, Brian.
I want to do a cold open here, Josh. What do you give this out of 5 stars?
Four zippity-doo-dahs out of 5. 4 sandworms out of 5. 4 Quizzatch Haderachs out of 5.
Nice.
4 Chonies out of 5. I don't know.
I was going to give 4 Chonies, yeah.
4 Gondobards out of 5.
Four
out of 5.
4 Christopher Walkens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, I don't know if that's what he was going for, but the dude looks like he's walking within an inch of the end of his life the whole movie.
You know what's interesting? I got to say this real quick, Brian. I saw, I looked up some trivia, right? I always like to do this for some of these movies. I looked it up as I was writing my review on Letterboxd, and I didn't even put this together. It says, Christopher Walken, who plays Emperor Shaddam IV, appeared in that 2001 music video, Fatboy Slim's Weapon of Choice, which includes several references to Dune, quoted, "Don't be shocked by the tone of my voice. Also, walk without rhythm and you won't attract the worm." Wow. I'm like, what? I remember those lyrics. Blew my mind.
Okay, Josh, we should establish this right now. Do we want this to be a spoiler-free episode? I mean, we'll get more listeners if we can.
I'm willing to do that because there's probably a lot of people who haven't seen it, will not see it for a bit. That's probably the best choice, but if you want to go full spoilers,
I think we should go spoiler-free.
Spoiler-free it is.
We can make our criticisms without spoiling it. So, yeah,
it's
guys.
Like having the popcorn bucket but not doing anything with it, you know?
Yep. What's the point in buying it?
Yeah, well, it just sits there on the shelf until the mood strikes.
I tried to get one. They never sent any. They never sent.
I didn't see any at the theater. Yeah. You know what I did see though?
SNL was too busy making skits with them.
Yeah, I saw the Slimer Ghostbuster popcorn bucket that they have. And what's funny is if you turn it around, it's just a giant ass cheeks. So you could just see the popcorn. It's see through. So you just see popcorn loaded in his ass cheeks.
That's hilarious.
But they had that.
You know what? You know what? I was thinking about this on the drive yesterday to see the movie. I thought to myself, I'm like, I guarantee, before those Dune popcorn buckets even went like public, somebody had already screwed one. Like, I guarantee behind the scenes, somebody had already tried it.
There's a person who's like, yeah, I'm absolutely gonna do this, but then you know there's the other person who's like, okay, everyone's made a joke about this, now I kind of want to try.
Now you're just like, yeah, you're just gonna do it. So okay, guys, so yeah, if you click this episode,
it's like, I didn't do that. Who does that?
if I was in the theater and there's a guy behind me at the Dune popcorn bucket, I'd want to move up a couple more rows. You know what I mean? But yeah, guys, if you click this episode, you already saw in the title that it's spoiler free, so nothing to worry about there. So yeah, Josh says he's at a 4. I think what I've came around to is a 4 as well. This is kind of why I wanted to talk, like do a cold open, because I want to establish for you guys where our thoughts are at critically before we go into everything else. Let's just do broad terms first here, Josh. Broad terms, positive. I thought this movie was beautifully shot, had amazing music, sound design, set, production, acting. It was great from beginning to end. I didn't really notice any particular issues with it. Very solid movie, very solid follow-up to the first Dune. So that's kind of where I go with a 4 out of 5. I'm just touching on the good for now. I want this to be what's at the top of the hour here. So Josh, what about you? Give us your broad good impressions of Dune.
It just looks beautiful as a film, and has a lot of moments that really that are just one of my favorite things that you see in movies, where someone's just like a chosen one, or people are reacting to it, and the music crescends, and I'm just like in awe of the spectacle of it all. So yeah, I mean, I really feel like, I mean, I got a lot more to break down when we get further, but broad-wise, I mean, it's the second half of one book as opposed to just a direct sequel. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of differences that come with that. But I feel like as the second half of one book, I mean, awesome. I waited 3 years to get to this, you know. When 3 years ago, I'm coming out of the, you know, Dune, and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, you do that thing as a fan when you try to envision, you know, what the next movie's going to look like in your mind, because you can't get it right now. And that's what I did, and it's cool to be on that other side.
Yeah.
I liked it.
Okay, yeah, so we both liked the movie. We both give it a 4. Both have lots of good things to say about it. So the takeaway, what I would want you to take away, whoever's listening to this, what I would want you to take away from this as when the podcast is over,
the Spice Lounge,
is that Brian and Josh enjoyed and liked Dune Part 2 and gave it a good score. That's what I'd like you to walk away with. Now, having said all that, I'm going to go into the whole spiel now.
Here we go.
When I saw Dune Part 1, I thought it was amazing. When I walked out of it, I was hyped. I saw it like 3 times. I think I gave it like a 5 out of 5 on Letterboxd. It's in my top 10 movies. Not top 5, but it's in the top 10. And I was really excited to see this movie. It's the only movie, other than Super Mario Bros., it's like the only movie. Yeah, was River around for that? I can't remember. I don't know if she was. This might be the only movie that I've actually taken the time to pre-order tickets for since I've been a dad, because I just don't really go to the movies as much anymore because it's just tough. You know, it's either get a babysitter for both of us or leave Erica alone for hours on end while I go watch a movie. So we don't usually do it. So this was something I was really hyped for. And this didn't let me down at all, but what I think is interesting is I think there's a desire amongst a lot of people similar to Josh and I. You don't have to be our age or even our you don't have to be a dude. You could be a woman. It could be anything. Like, but I think there's something very similar to this vibe that in our culture, that when people go to see a movie like this, they want it to be this amazing moment. They want it to be this revolutionary experience. They want to be able to walk away from it talking about the ascendant experience they had. And I've had those with things at plenty of times. But I didn't have that with Dune Part 2. And I think Dune Part 2 was very sobering to me, because I was like, I kind of like walked out of the movie saying, you know what, Brian, you don't have to be a huge fan of everything. You know what I mean? Like, it's so easy to want to be. I mean, how often does the term, like, I'm a big fan of this, get used? I mean, most of the time when someone says they're a big fan, it's not like they have a room with, like, $14,000 worth of collectibles. They might own the movie, but they're a big fan. Or maybe not even that, you know. And I'm a big fan of a lot of things, though. I mean, I am a huge fan of a lot of things, just like Josh is, you know, Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, Halo, all kinds of stuff. But I think Dune was, like, poised to be this next big thing that me and many others become a huge fan of. And watching Dune Part 2, I just felt like, you know, I enjoy this. I like this. I'll buy it when it comes out on 4K. I'll watch it again at some point. But I'm not a huge fan. I'm just an enjoyer. I'm just a passive enjoyer. I like these movies. I don't know how I reconcile that with having Dune Part 1 in my top 10. Maybe I'll watch it again and be like, oh, I see why this was. Or maybe it'll fall down. I don't know.
Well, go further. You know, obviously avoiding spoilers.
Yeah.
What was it about this one that had a more sobering experience for you?
Yeah. I mean, something I said to Josh that, once again, I believe this is spoiler-free. I'm not using anything specific to give you. I mean, really, anything I say is just something you could ascertain from the trailers. But, like, if you guys remember the first Dune movie, and I think Josh said he agreed with me, the first Dune movie was, like, 3/4 Atreides family, their empire, they're on their own planet, they travel to, Arrakis, you know, they establish their base, there's the battle with the Harkonnens, and that's like 3/4 of the movie, right? And then the last 25% of the first Dune is basically Paul and his mom, and they're out in the sand, and there's the sandworms, and then they meet the Fremen, and then the movie ends, right? That's part one.
Yeah.
So part two is really just that last 25% of part one. That's the whole movie. The whole movie is Paul out in the middle of the sand with the Fremen. That's pretty much the whole 2.5 hour experience of Dune Part Two. And as Josh said, these two parts make up one book. So that gives it even more like credibility for why it is that way. But I don't know if maybe so much of that like establishment of the first film with like the Atreides family and their empire gave me something more to latch onto. Because I think there's a sense in like, and maybe it's just because I have Star Wars brain right now, but like I think there's a sense in which the first Dune kind of gave some Star Wars vibes, you know, like family, you know, rich family, popular family coming from a different planet and trying to establish on a desert planet a new, you know, that kind of had some, I mean, even Frank Herbert back in the day was like wanted to sue George Lucas for Star Wars because he thought it was a copy. So I think some of what I loved about that's missing, some of the like straight up like, Dune Part 1 had, like, you know, the Atreides family versus the Harkonnens, and you had, like, Oscar Isaac as the dad, and you had, like, Jason Momoa, and it had a lot more
kind of, fight like demons.
Yeah, it had a lot more of, like, a fun, let's jump in the helicopter, kick some ass to it. And this movie, because it is, like, the second half, and it's all with the Fremen in the desert, it's a very, like, spiritual, very odd, archaic kind of story. Where, you know, the weirder elements, yeah, that's a good way to put it. The weirder elements of Dune Part 1 is basically what Dune Part 2 was focused on. Like, Dune Part 1 was peppered with all the weird moments, but Dune Part 2 is just like, okay, we brought you in with Part 1. Part 2 is all the weirdness, and it's fully on display. And, I mean, on one hand, I've never actually read the Dune novel, but I've wiki-read the hell out of that stuff because I got really into it when I first watched Part 1. And so I knew what happened in Part 2. None of this, like, surprises me. Like, I knew where the story ended. I knew what happened in it. But I don't know. I just feel like it's hard for me to come home and be like when the movie was over, I was relieved. Not because it was bad, but it was just like, okay, I'm ready to go home now. It was 2.5 hours. It was, some of it did feel its length. Like some movies, I'm just like, 2.5 hours? Holy shit, I feel like I'd been here an hour. This movie felt like, I mean, it mostly felt like 2.5 hours. And I would say at least 1 hour of that was very slow feeling. Probably around the middle point. The end goes pretty quick, the last hour or so. I don't find myself walking away, you know, feeling like I'm a huge, you know, like it's like when I walk away from Star Wars, like, oh, huge Luke Skywalker fan, whatever, you know, walk away from Lord of the Rings, oh, Aragorn, Legolas. I don't feel like I walk away from Dune being like, oh, I'm such a huge Paul Atreides fan, or I'm such a huge, like, you know, Chani or any other main character, like, fan. I just kind of feel like this is a really well-told story and really well-done movies that I like and enjoy, but the second one was very sobering to me. I just don't feel like it's going to be a favorite franchise for me. It's just going to be a good one I enjoyed. Now, not everything has to be something I'm a huge fan of. And, of course, maybe time will pass and I'll rewatch this movie and I'll reevaluate and I'll have a change of heart. It's definitely happened before, but I don't know. The feelings I had felt pretty real, and I feel like Josh had a lot of similar feelings, which I'm about to pass it to him and let him share. But I don't know. It was just weird because, like, I told Josh when I texted him last night, I was like, I walked out of the theater less of a Dune fan than I was when I walked in. And I wonder how much of that just had to do with, like, Dune Part 1. You know, like I said, it has the very, like, establishing beginning stuff with, like, the Atreides family. And then, of course, it came out during COVID and it was, like, a new thing and it was fun and exciting. It was really good. And then, you know, seeing the follow-up here, like, this is kind of when it becomes a franchise more. This is the second part. We most assuredly will get a third part, if not more. I just felt less attached to it. So I don't want to say, like, because if I said, like, Dune Part 2 is disappointing, that
sounds like someone's weaning off the spice melange to me.
I'm weaning off the spice melange, Josh. I think if someone said, like, Dune Part 2 is disappointing, that would imply there was something wrong with the film. And I don't want to say that because I really don't feel like there was particularly. But it's just tough. And I'm trying to reconcile, too, with myself, like, why I gave the first movie a 5, which I don't think it is, and why I gave this movie a 4, which I do think it is. You know, I don't really think there's many problems with it, but at the same time, I don't think it's some 10 out of 10 experience. I think it's, you know, it's a story that's very And I mean, me and Josh grasp it just fine, and I know probably lots of you do as well, but it's not an easy story to grasp in general. It doesn't give you characters that it wants you to be able to slot your feet into their shoes. You know, like, George Lucas wanted you to feel like a Luke Skywalker or a Leia or a Han, or, you know, or J.R. Tolkien wanted you to feel like an Aragorn or a Legolas, but this story just really isn't there to serve that. So it's not really a... Like, you could have a fun time watching this movie, of course, but, like, the movie's not meant to be, like, fun. It's not, like, catchy Marvel one-liners. Not that it should be, nor would I want it to be. It's not, like, lots of jokes. It's very serious. It's very religious kind of feeling, spiritual. And, it just didn't resonate with me the way I expected it to. And I walked out of it being let down, I guess more so by what I wanted from it than anything wrong with the movie. I'll have more to say, Josh, but take it from here. What do you think, man? Where are you at?
Well, I mean, I definitely walked away with a few criticisms. I talked to Brian. This was fun. So I went and saw the movie, guys, with Jeff, who we had on the first episode, the Dune episode, one of my favorites we've ever done. I went to see it with him and our buddy Irwin, but I was meeting up with them. So prior to that, I called Brian. Because Brian had thoughts. So we were talking on the phone on my drive out to the theater and waiting for Irwin and Jeff to arrive. And he was giving me his thoughts. And I was telling him, I thought with my back issues, and I thought 2 hour, you know, almost a 3 hour movie. I'm like, I don't know. Like, it sounded exciting when I got the tickets. But then I looked at the runtime. I was like, ah! But it was worth it because I wanted to see those guys again. Well... There was a part of me I was like, man, am I just getting older and I don't want to go sit in a theater for 3 hours? And I was thinking of what Brian said, and that, you know, it got me thinking that. And I mean, I definitely don't want to see a lot of like 3 hour movies, but I don't mind every so often. And in this case, I definitely came out a bit different than I was going in a good way. I loved it, but I did have some criticisms with it. The problem is for me, is that the criticisms largely stem from the fact of what I said earlier, that this is the second half of one complete story. And I look to something like Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, where the whole movie is just the three guys, you know, Hermione, Harry, and Ron walking around, traveling. There's a little bit of action interspersed, but it's namely just walking around, right? It's kind of cooking. Well... that's what this one is on the inverse, right? Whereas the first movie had a lot of fish out of water experience of this family landing on this new planet, learning, trying to learn its way. Stuff happens. Paul, you know, people are witnessing Paul, and they're starting to see things match up that may align with him being the one that's been prophesized about. But this one is more just walking around, hanging out with a Fremen and traveling. So there's the part of me that's like, well... it's slow. It's not a lot happens. I mean, on the surface, it's just like, well, he's just with the Fremen, like you said. There's a lot of spiritualness to it, which I mean, I love, but it's just a lot of slow cooking until the last like 40 minutes. So for like a 3 hour movie, you know, it's like 2 hours of just chilling out, you know, and I mean, granted, it's all building up to crescendo into the ending that we get and how that sets up for a part three. I feel like that's well done. It's just bearing in mind that this is the second half of one story, because if I'm looking at this like this is actually like a sequel, if this is an Empire Strikes Back to like A New Hope, it feels weird that it's like 2 hours of just chilling out, camping, talking, Paul learning stuff, becoming one more with the Fremen. It doesn't do as much that's exciting that's going to pull you away and make you go, oh, wow, like I need to learn more about this stuff. But that's because it's the continuation. So I kind of flip-flop because it's like I do see criticisms in its pacing. I think Denny Villeneuve – I'm Denny. I'm a Denny. They're always open.
Denny V.
Yeah, Denny V, my man. The Smice Lounge guy. I feel like he is a bit self-indulgent at times. There are shots that feel like they do kind of sit on characters' faces for a little too long, or on cinematography shots. Like, look, I'm a great cinematographer, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. I do feel like it's a little self-indulgent, and it's sometimes stuff like that can pad out the runtime where we don't need it. I don't want a breakneck movie, and I love, again, that this cooks, because I do not like breakneck pace films. But it does feel like there's a little bit of self-indulgency going on. I think the score is good. I mean, I know I'm going all over, but I think just on the criticism side, I mean, the one thing it did the most was, and I, this isn't spoiler really because I'm not getting into the context of it, but the character of Chani is a bit different. She's substantially different than how she is in the book. And I like Zendaya a lot. I liked character Chani. Did not like her in this movie as a result. And I think if someone doesn't really pay attention to the books, it's probably not going to bother you as much. So I think for me, it's just more of a pet peeve and not like an actual objective criticism I can throw at the movie. But it just felt very combative with where a lot of the other characters are in the journey without getting into specifics. And I just found that strange because at the end of, by the end of the movie, it felt to me as if it served no real purpose to the overall plot. It didn't change anything, so it made me ask why the change there? Why be combative? Maybe that's something we see pay off in the third movie.
Third movie, yeah. See, you know what, Josh, not to interrupt you, but I feel like you made a really strong point, which, I mean, it's on one hand, it's kind of glaringly obvious, but I didn't think about it too much, is like, this really is just the continuation of one film. You know, so
it's a big difference, right? Because, you know, it's just like when you see movies, I feel like it started with Harry Potter, but they started to split some book adaptations.
Yeah, I've never thought of it like that till now.
Yeah.
Because like with Harry Potter, it's like, oh, you've already done seven movies. The last one is going to be split into two or six movies. The last one will be split into two. Well, this is the beginning, right? There is no like we've seen five Dunes and now they're going to split it to make more money. Yeah. It just started that way. And I think to some extent, and obviously if you look at like the Rotten Tomatoes for this, it's like a 95. So people love it, but like I think to some extent the movie does suffer kind of objectively from not being a complete story. It is the back half of one, and I think that is part of the reason why I probably didn't enjoy it as much. And even as we talk now, I can really see myself with time and thought and a reviewing of it, enjoying it more. You know, and I also told Josh like there is the whole thing of, you know, we've talked about Rogue One before, how my Rogue One experience wasn't very good because of, you know, I'm not going to tell the story again, but because someone was an asshole to me the second it started and it kind of all that. Well, like this for Dune Part 2, I've been playing Rebirth all day, which is a game I've been thinking about for 4 years and finally playing it for the first time. So I was happy to turn it off to go see Dune, but like that was there in the background. And then Erica was sick and she left the movie halfway through because she didn't feel good. And I was more than happy to go with her and see the movie later. But we had two cars, just the way things had worked out, and she really preferred that I stayed and finish it myself. She went home. So just because, just between like Erica being sick and you know, Rebirth being out, maybe it skewed things for me. But I do think there's a reframing of perspective Josh has given me here that I really appreciate, which is just that this is not a film on its own. It's just not. Like this film without the first part doesn't really work. And to be honest, the two parts together, it's already such, I don't know, convoluted is not the word, but it's such strange material to adapt that many people aren't going to fully grasp what's happening anyways. I know most of the people listening to this podcast, you're probably like super nerdy, so you probably really don't have much trouble with it. And if you did, you probably wiki read it or read the books and you've come to an understanding. But we're not the mainstream audience. And the mainstream audience, like, it's a hard thing to convey what this story is anyways. Like, and I hate to always use my dad as an example because, like, my dad's a smart, intelligent man. But my dad's just, when it comes to media, he's not a nerd. He's a mainstream dude. And if my dad watched these movies, by the end, he's not going to really know what the Muad'Dib is. He's not going to really understand the significance of them, people following Paul. He's not going to understand the significance of the worms. He's not going to understand why, and once again, only referring to part one because we're not spoiling. He's not going to understand why there's a big fat guy that floats and he drops in a bathtub. Like, it's so weird. It's so archaic.
Oh, yeah.
So it's already tough to understand, and then you remove some of the content to make it more adaptable to audiences because, like, you know, Denny has dropped certain things to make it more mainstream. So you have it being convoluted. Then he mainstreams it. Then he splits it into two movies. And here you're just watching the second part, and I think this is definitely hard to follow as – I think it's hard enough to follow as two films. But if you just see this film, it's virtually impossible to follow, right? Like, Josh, if you never read the book and you never seen the first movie and you tried to follow this, this would just feel like a big self-indulgent mess of nothingness. I think it is just I feel like I'm criticizing people I don't know yet. But, like, I feel like people could listen to what I'm saying and just be like, well, I understood it. I understand cinema. You know, I understand the high concepts of this film.
They're like, definitely out there.
Yeah, and I'm like, it's not that I don't understand those things. It's not that I'm too dumb to, like, get it. It's just, it is what it is, right? It is a very high concept, kind of weird, archaic thing that this story is telling. And even though I can grasp it, it's like, it's still on a very simplistic level, like, I'm going to the cinema to have a good time, have a fun time, you know? And this was never supposed to be, nor did I ever want it to be, a Marvel movie or a Disney Star Wars movie. But, like, there is a sense of which just general movie-going entertainment is kind of lost here. Mm-hmm. For the sake of the high art, which I do appreciate. Mm-hmm. It's just a weird business here, because even if I, you know, you say you brought this whole thing up about it being like a part two and it not really being its own independent thing. Would I love sitting to watch part one and two all together at once for 5 hours? I don't know if I would or not. Like, I know that could be a cool experience, but I'm also like, 5 hours to tell this story, which I know some would probably argue that based off the book, you need more than 5 hours to tell the first book, but like, that's a lot of time, and that's a lot of slowness and a lot of still shots and a lot of sand, you know, like it's just a lot. So I don't know. I'm just talking through my feelings here, Josh. You got more you want to say based on?
Well, I'll say just, you know, there are, I think you're right with, this is the kind of movie, if you don't have any preconceived knowledge of Dune, I'm not really going to believe too many people who come out of these movies and say, I get it right away, you know? Like the spice melange or what the Kwisatz Haderach is or all these different terminologies or how these, you know, characters' eyes turn blue or you got to drink blue juice or this person's, you know, the suit's got, you know, sweat in them and all this type of stuff that feels, I mean, Dune's, especially the later books get very abstract, but I think even on its own, it's a lot, I kind of liken it to something like The Prestige, where you watch it and you feel like you're getting it, and then by the end of the movie you're like, whoa. And mm-hmm. then if you rewatch it, then you start picking up on all the other stuff makes sense because of some of the reveals you get. And I feel like it's a little bit different, but I feel like with Dune is the kind of thing where when you rewatch it, then you start to understand it. But a first moviegoer's time, like journey through these movies, gonna be very confusing with a lot of mm-hmm. stuff. I think you'll probably grasp the sort of almost like Jesus biblical sense of like the prophecy of this mm-hmm. person coming, but at the same time all the other stuff around that is very confusing, you know. And I can see it, but you do have a lot of folk out there who will be like, oh, not for me, I get it right away. And the problem I have with that is you get a lot of, we talked about this off air, but to have it on the podcast, you get a lot of cinephiles out there who, at least to me, they're people like who will, you know, you get like a 20-something-year-old who will go watch Metropolis and be like, this whole, you know, one of the first movies ever made basically is like, this is a masterpiece, 5 out of 5. And some, and I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not saying they're circle jerking it, you know, but at the same time, there is a notion of, it's kind of like a hipster thing, you know, right? And like mm-hmm. with these high art movies that Dune, I think, fits into, at least by modern standards, I think some people will it into masterpiece territory. They want to take possession of it. They want to call it a masterpiece. They want to come out the gate and say, this is one of the best films ever seen. Immediately slot this in their favorites of all time, throwing away movies that they've had for years of, you know, nostalgia and everything. And they just knock it out of the way to put this new current movie up there. And I think I don't always disagree, or I don't always agree with that type of mentality, because I like the more nuanced critical thinking thought. It's not that I like to think about the bad things. These days I like to focus more on the positives, but I do find that with something like this, for example, people will say they get it. Just like a movie from the 20s, they'll be like, I get it. It's a 5 out of 5 movie, one of my favorites of all time. I'm like, stop being pretentious. Like, fuck off. Like, it's a pet peeve of mine.
Hot take, Josh, but I just genuinely don't feel like either of these Dune movies are masterpieces.
Well,
I don't.
To summarize,
the cinematography might be masterpiece level.
Sure.
But not the films. They're great. But masterpieces? Like, I just know. And I think that's the thing. Is like, I feel like sometimes, and of course, you know, it's all opinion at the end of the day, but how often do people have trouble separating the forest from the trees? Like, they see the cinematography, and they hear the loud Hans Zimmer sound, and they're just so captivated. It's like, masterpiece, masterpiece. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, but look at the material here. Look at the whole overall product, you know? And I feel like there's so many moments of both Dunes, but I think probably more so this one, where... what are we actually watching, right? Like, what is on screen, a lot of times what's great about it is the technological marvel. It's not really, because a lot of times what I'm watching is two sand people talk, somebody walk through a dune, somebody, you know, just talk about some religious nonsense to someone else. Like, it's like, sure. There's not often much happening on screen that's really, you know, what's capturing my interest is the cinematography. It is the masterwork, the craft of filmmaking. It's not so much the content. And you can blame that on Denny, or you can blame it on Frank Herbert. But once again, I just feel like every time I say something like this, it throws up red flags of people like, oh, you just don't get it. It's like, no, I really do.
Listen,
you
know? I mean, I was all over the place in what I just said previously. But to summarize that, to go off to what you said, you know, I apologize if I sound like I'm pee-pee poo-pooing on other people. But there is a high art notion with certain movies that people kind of latch onto and will treat certain movies like a religious experience. And sometimes it makes it hard to discuss things with certain folk because of that. And I think with something like this, you know, the first movie came out in COVID era, released day and date on Max, HBO Max at the time.
Max.
Yeah, Max. Max. But, you know, that was a different time. It had success out the gate, to the point that 4 days after the theatrical, it was in theaters, they greenlit the sequel. But I feel like there were many more fans that would still come after its theatrical run. Whereas now you look at it, and this movie has been the most anticipated movie that I've seen personally. I'm not saying I'm right, I'm just saying my own perspective, since the likes of Endgame or a Star Wars movie, like in terms of just mass crowd, websites crashing for ticket sales, stuff of that nature. So it's like a religious experience for a lot of people. And we didn't get that with the first one because of the way and times that things were. So there's two sides of the coin for me. There's one side that says, well, that's kind of exciting because you kind of mentioned it earlier, Brian, but what does this mean for the future of Dune? Is it becoming a modern age Star Wars for people? Is it becoming a modern age Lord of the Rings? I think it is. I think we're witnessing that kind of happen. But on the other hand, how much of it is high art people trying to take possession of what they view as cinema opposed to a movie and trying to elevate this maybe more than it needs to be just for the sake of, you know, It's a well-produced movie, beautiful cinematography. It doesn't have breakneck pacing, cracking one-liners constantly, and what we've become accustomed to with blockbusters. It's clearly a different film. It's like I guess the best way on the surface I could compare it, this is like an A24 film compared to a Marvel film, right? It's just, they're completely different films and completely different types. But I think that there's a notion that, like, people want this out the gate to be a 5 out of 5 movie, right? Mm-hmm. And then I feel like people go in and sometimes get on the other side of these things and they will give it a 5 out of 5, but talk about it like it's holier than thou. Like, I'll try to look up a couple quick Letterboxd reviews, which just kind of like lend more credence to what people are saying. This one said,
to be fair, like, this isn't the craziest movie to give a 5 to.
No.
We're at a 4. No, so, I mean, it's just that. Yeah. Go
ahead. Sorry. I don't sometimes see critical thinking too much. Like, I know, like, people are going to come out and love this. Why do you love it? And can you find anything you don't like? You know, can you at least offer? Like, it's not that I want you to dislike something. I just want to hear a little more, like, thought to it as opposed to it's just amazing. It's a masterpiece. One of the top reviews says, one of those movie-going experiences I'll cherish for the rest of my life. Another one says, that's it. That's the best sci-fi ever made. Another one says, are you effing kidding me? This is big time. Feels like we're witnessing history. Another one, I have seen the light of Islam. Wow. You know, this is a movie-going experience you'll definitely tell your grandkids about. This is truly cinematic event of our generation. Literally shaking and crying. The man has doing it again. Wow. I mean, monumental, colossal, Herculean, transcendent, an experience, an event, a moment. Our empire strikes back, but better. It's what I'm saying, where you have that sort of recency bias.
So hyperbolic.
Yeah, you have that recency bias, and I love that people are enjoying it. I think we should all, I want people to enjoy movies.
Because we enjoy
it. I want to talk about the enthusiasm. Yeah, because I love it, but I want to hear a little more nuanced discussion that's not like immediately taking this movie that's brand new and fresh and just throwing away so much. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, it's a short life we live. And people don't always want to put a lot of stock into the things they say, and that makes complete sense to me. It's a busy life we live. But for me, for example, if I come out of this movie and I'm like, it's a masterpiece, you know, I feel like I'm kind of poo-pooing on some movies that have been out for a while that like kind of took time to earn that status quo. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying it out the gate for this movie without really saying why or letting it have time to cook. I just, for myself, at least it invalidates my own opinion if I do that. But I don't judge other people. Like, I love seeing those reviews. I just, it, like you said, you see a lot of it. And I think because of the anticipation of people wanting this to be well, they're going to make claims like that. And it's hard because I want to see a more nuanced discussion. That's all.
It's weird, too, because like people saying, like, you know, it's like a religious experience. I'll tell my kids about this. I'm like, I won't. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have a religious experience. Like, I saw a good movie and I went home. Like, I'm not going to tell River about this. Like, and the funny thing is like, I'm not trying to compare the two because they're not the same at all. But like, I will tell River about what it was like to see like Infinity War or Endgame.
Sure.
I will tell her what it was like when Disney brought Star Wars back after 10 years and we saw Force Awakens. And
well, and to your credit, too, to your defense, Brian, I mean, you love a lot of movies that aren't considered like blockbuster movies. You recommended me Prisoners this year, and I watched that fantastic movie, another of Denny's, and I thought it was phenomenal.
Didn't I show you Blade Runner 2049, too?
Mm-hmm. You showed me that. You introduced me to the Blade Runner movies. Jeff got me curious, and I came over one day, and I was telling you about it. You're like, I got them. Here, you want to watch them? And I watched them, and we had a great experience. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you're not just a blockbuster person. I mean, obviously, no. I think that's our territory, but we dip out of that. I loved everything, everywhere, well, all at
going
once.
Back to what you said about, like, people saying, like, this is their modern-day trilogy, this is their Star Wars or Lord of the Rings, I'm like, is it, though? Because, like, I understand what you're saying is, like, there's this high-profile, high-quality trilogy coming out in your lifetime or right now, but, like, I think there's a lot of similarities between Star Wars and Lord of the Rings, as to why those are so generational and important to people. You know, Star Wars and Lord of the Rings have this giant cast of characters that have very unique personalities that you can step into their shoes. They have humor, they have strengths, they have weaknesses, they have camaraderie. You know, it's a battle for, you know, good against evil. It's like all the things that, while I understand they're more mainstream, the things that we really attach to as people, you know, how many memes have we seen for Star Wars and Lord of the Rings over our life? You know, how many times do we reference it where it's like, you know, you'll have to toss me, you know, or Aragorn, he did, you know, he actually broke his foot when he kicked that helmet, or, you know, Star Wars,
well,
you know, Yoda memes, you know, just all that stuff, like Dune, it's like, it doesn't fill the same space that those do. Like, and I understand, like, you can make an argument that the Dune movies are better than Star Wars or sure. Lord of the Rings. You can make that argument because they're very good movies. But it's really not in that same pocket to me. And I just feel like, I don't know. It's hard to rally myself around it and get excited. Like, it's hard for me to be tough. Like,
because
yeah, go ahead, Josh. Well, go ahead.
I get where you're coming from, though, because I look at something like Lord of the Rings that has tons of memes and everything. That's more like, again, I talk about like, cinema or blockbusters, you know what I mean? And I feel like something like Lord of the Rings falls into the blockbuster cinema category, where it's clearly like high art in a lot of ways with the cinematography, it's production, but it sells action figures and merchandising and gets memed and stuff like that. And Dune gets memed, of course, as well, but it's not as much like an accessible movie. This very much is like a 20 to 30 year old like demographic in that age range of people who I think really like this. And I said it off air too, but and I didn't, you know, come up with this myself, but it is definitely a part of that Sigma Chad cinematic universe of like movies like Taxi Driver, American Psycho, Nightcrawler, Fight Club, Blade Runner
Drive, 2049, Blade Runner 2049.
Drive. Yeah, and a lot of it fits into those movies of like a white dude who kind of like becomes a hero, everyone. Whether to himself or someone else, you know, in some way or another, and just like Joker as well. And the thing is when I say that, like, I said it to Brian, I said it to Jeff even, and each time they both, as well as myself, were like, well, I like some of those movies. There's the connotation that like it's a bad thing, and it's like, well, no, I think every person can pick a movie out of that list.
I asked Josh if The Dark Knight was Sigma Chad, because that's my number two behind Lord of the Rings, and he was basically like, yeah, we know
it. Kind of is, okay. Yeah. But no, but yeah. I mean, and that doesn't make it a bad thing, it's just that, like, again,
it's there's a trope.
You got a lot of dudes around our age who are at the point, and I've been guilty of it too. You got a lot of dudes who are around that point of, let's say, something like the sequel trilogy. They will completely shit on it. They will get excited for something like The Force Awakens and all practical effects, just like I remember Han Solo original cast back like I remember. And then not too long after, well, it's a retread of A New Hope. Well, they didn't do this right. Well, porgs, are you fucking kidding me?
Women? Luke are Skywalker, you kidding me?
Women. And like, I don't see, like, for example, I don't see women complaining about a movie or heralding this movie like it's the Messiah. You know,
yeah.
even though Paul Atreides is himself, but you see what I did there. But it's just more of a guy thing that like they just want to elevate it.
It is more of a guy thing. And it's interesting.
You need it. Like I just think things need time. Like I like that people love this movie and I like that they're so moved by it. But I don't see a lot of critical thinking to the point where I guess I ask myself, did these folk that went to see it, were they already just ready to write that and type that up? Or did they really see the same movie? I'm not saying that I saw things they didn't or they saw things I didn't. It's just there's a lack. When a movie's just hyped, you feel like the odd man out. Like, for example, when Endgame came out, I love that movie. Holy cow. I gave it like a 2.5 out of 5. And I felt oddly out because it's like, well, this is on its own, it's a great movie in a sense. But it's more better in the broader sense of what it's concluding, right?
It's not very good on its own.
On its own, it's just slow. Yeah, it's slowly paced. So that's how I looked at it. But then I also have to take into account the bigger picture. Well, it's something like this being the second half of a book. I have to take into account the bigger picture. But on the other hand, you do sometimes feel like the odd one out when you don't take to it as well as everyone else who just seems ready to love it right away and celebrates it like the biggest one of all time. You know, you feel like that gif of like Lieutenant Dan, like during New Year's Eve and everyone's celebrating and you're just sitting there like, damn, like, what am I missing here? You know, I mean, that's how it looks, not in the context of that movie. But yeah, on the movie itself, though, I mean, like, yeah, I think it's very slowly paced until the last like 40 minutes. I think it is definitely the thing, too, with it. It's just with a lot of movies, there's a lot of heart. This is a very sterile. These are very sterile films. Like, I'm not saying they're devoid of like heart and personality.
I would That's say there. They don't really have much heart.
But yeah, I'm not trying to say like they're non-existent. It's just, again, it's completely without that, you know. And it's a very clean movie despite looking dirty in some of its scenes, if that makes sense. So I just it's kind of tough. And the reason why I circle around that is because I see, like, Brian was telling me right out the gate how you kind of felt. Just like, man, I don't know. It almost made me retroactively like Dune 1 less. I'm putting words in your mouth, but it was along those lines of like,
most likely,
you felt like you're not as big of a Dune fan as you were going in.
Yeah.
And I thought about it myself, and I'm like, well, I'm not excited for Dune as much as I used to be, but I know I do have a habit of when I see people latch onto something, I get a little bit more distant from it. So I'm like, okay. And then I come out of the movie, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember why I really love the Dune stuff, but I tend to love the Dune lore more than just these movies themselves. But I think the problem is more just these are high art films. They're more sterile compared to contemporary movie making. And there's a lot to love there. But you also have the second half of one book on top of all these people who kind of conditioned every other person. We all condition one another to treat this like a religious experience. Like, we can't miss Dune Part 2. You know, that's this must-see
if you
event.
Do, what are you doing? Why didn't you take it?
What are you doing? So, yeah, it's just all that bearing in mind that makes me have a little bit
more. It's weird because of its intentionally sterile experience. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, what Denny's doing with these movies, it's what he should do. This is adapting the book in an awesome way. They're great films. But, like, because of the sterile nature of them, it doesn't really give us as much to talk about as, like, even, like, you know, you heard me and Josh talk about, like, Jurassic Park Dominion. You know, Jurassic Park Dominion compared to Dune, we're talking about, like, a shit stain compared to like a beautiful like stained glass window from the 18th century, you know, because Dominion's just this messy, you know, blockbuster all over the place kind of thing. But it's like, we had so much to say about Jurassic Park Dominion, or so much to say about Rise of Skywalker. We haven't got there yet. Because and I know that's maybe not making my argument the best, because I'm like, we're like, Brian, why are you bringing up like what many people consider shit movies? But to a more like mainstream audience, those movies, they give you all the things that you kind of want to latch onto as a normal human, like, you know, friends and nostalgia and high stakes and humor and action, and like it kind of, there's a reason those are mainstream films, right?
Sure.
Because the hero's journey and the and explosions and conflict, all that stuff. Like Dune isn't mainstream. I mean, you could argue that it's mainstream by the sense that it's like doing successful at the box office, but like, it's just not something that like me and Josh's dad are going to be like, hey man, hey buddy, you want to get some sloppy
Joes?
No, it's
not,
and watch
it's not
Dune?
A super accessible movie or series. And I mean, but it's like, in a sense, it's accessible, but it's just a very deep, abstract at times film or series. And I think that is tough.
And
it's not
great. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
That's
and
great.
It's not something a casual enjoyer that just wants to watch a movie and turn their brain off. It's going to make them think where they don't want to think. And sometimes I don't want to think at all. So I understand both sides of it. And I think honestly what I'm trying to say, because I'm circling the drain, I think it's just the Dune fans are like a lot of other fans you see with certain movies that become very pretentious to me. And I don't think anyone in our Discord's like that. I'm not saying that to any of you, so I hope that doesn't affect what, you know, how you guys speak on this movie when you see it, or whenever around this episode. But I just see that out there. But the movie itself, I mean, every criticism I feel like I've heard, namely between Brian and Deontay, you know, I feel like I align with those takes. In no way would I debate those. And on the other hand, it's like I still loved it. So I feel firmly in the middle with people. And like the four is more like an objective take as opposed to just the fun factor. I still had a great time. But was it slow and prodded? Absolutely.
What would you say is like your subjective score? Like just you're in your feels, kind of whatever.
I think probably a 3, I think.
Okay. That sounds right.
Because like, okay, I think the thing I love about these movies is just the way they, I said it earlier, but the way they emphasize, you know, the way people look at Paul when, you know, when they're realizing he's the one who would be able to look where they cannot, you know, and you're starting to see that the prophecy is fulfilling, and you have people, certain characters that look with sheer terror, other ones that look at him with tears of jubilation, basically, you know, over excitement at this prophecy being fulfilled, and you have two different sides of that. But the music always hammers in the fact of how almost terrifying this is for the future of the universe, but also how like beautiful it is to a lot of people, especially for those on Arrakis who want to see a green paradise again, trees and stuff.
I think the scale and the scope and the music does a good job of forcing you to feel the religious experience that the Fremen or whoever.
Yeah, perfectly said. You know? No, and I buy into that, and I love that, and I love the scope of it. I love, like, in this one, just I feel like by the end of it, I was like, oh yeah, man, the juice was worth the squeeze on all the waiting. And characters like Javier Bardem, Stilgar, he was my favorite character. He actually made a couple jokes in this that were like,
yeah, he was the humor.
It didn't feel like some Marvel thing or something. I know that's got bad, you know,
juju
association now, but but like, it was just subtle and it worked. And seeing his character kind of represents the face of those that really buy into Paul being Muad'Dib, you know, the Kwisatz Haderach, Lisan Al Gaib. So I love that. I loved how the ending of it looked just in certain shots and how it was filmed. I mean, obviously, again, cinematography, everything we said before, but I don't know. I feel like it's just grand and epic, and I really enjoy the journey of his character. You know, Chani was a hard sticking point for me, but that, again, is more of a nitpick. On the criticism side, it's just a slow film, and I think he gets a little self-indulgent because he's got a little bit more leeway. Denny is someone who, he said once
in
the past,
and it's incomplete as its own film.
Yeah, yeah. I'm paraphrasing, but Denny said before, I think after the failure of Blade Runner 2049 at the box office, he said something like, if I keep making movies, the kind of movies I want to make, I'm going to have to start making the movies that Hollywood wants to make because these aren't making money. I'm not making money off these movies. Well, 4 days after Dune comes out in the pandemic, even though it would still get many more fans later on, with a day and date release where people could just sit home and stream it, it makes enough money to get greenlit. And then this comes out and people, the reviews out the gate are already heralding this.
It's
like,
big.
You're seeing like one of the highest Rotten Tomatoes, Letterboxd, IMDb, all that type of stuff. All these stats are being thrown at people to get them hyped. And now you can tell a third one's going to happen, at least one more to wrap it up. So for me, it's kind of like, you know, I'm excited for the future, but at the same time, you know, there's still criticisms to be levied at it, you know? And I like, I want to see it succeed. I like that it's successful, but it's just, it's not a perfect movie.
We'll be there for the
movie.
Third.
Yeah. It's just, it's not a perfect movie, and I don't want to personally act like I am, and I...
Well, we don't want to artificially, like, disregard all these experiences we loved to put this movie in front of it because of some highbrow cinematic experience.
You know, like, possible. Yeah. I'll come out of this later, like you said, and I'll come out and it's like 5 out of 5, or I'll be like, masterpiece. But I feel like it has to earn that. And movie, I'm never going to give that to a movie out the gate. I just got to think on it. And that's what this episode is. It's just breaking it down and thinking about it out loud. Because it is, it's a slow movie, man.
You were talking about some of the things you liked. I feel like I could do that.
Do they?
Obviously, no spoilers, but... I mean, besides the obvious that we've talked about ad nauseum, the amazing cinematography and sound and all that stuff, like, as far as, like, story moments go, no spoilers. I'm just going to be extremely vague to where it's nothing. There's a moment kind of similar to, you know, like an Avatar where it's, like, Jake Sully. He has to, like, learn to catch his own, like, what's the flying things caught?
Oh, I forget now off the top of my head, but I love it.
There's a moment kind of like that in this movie that I really loved. There's a whole sequence in the movie where Danny Villeneuve does something interesting with the color of the film that I really thought was neat. The whole last 40 minutes and how
You're talking about. That was cool.
Yeah, that was cool. The whole last 40 minutes and how it builds and completes this one novel, this one story, because this is part two, I thought was really well done. It had me captivated pretty much through the whole... I texted Josh in the middle of the theater. I'm like, oh, you know, this last 40 minutes is really...
Yeah.
Catching me. I like the chemistry between Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya. I like their chemistry. I like a lot of the high profile actors and actresses they brought into this film. I thought they added to the universe well, anywhere from Florence Pugh to Anna Taylor-Joy to Christopher Walken.
The Anna Taylor-Joy thing was so different than the books too. That was interesting.
Yeah.
Not that it's bad. I didn't hate it. It's just different.
Yeah, there was something really cool done with, which if you know the books, you would know what I'm talking about. But there's something really cool done with like Paul's mother and her unborn baby. It had way more good than bad. It didn't really have any bad. It's just that like Josh said, it was very slow and so overindulgent at times. And it didn't really function amazingly as it's a standalone film.
Got a question.
Kind of need part one.
Take your time.
Yeah, go ahead, Josh. Why don't you ask me?
Well, for you, I'm getting the vibe. You're correct. Yeah. I'll have a quick final thought so we can kind of start to wrap up and get out of here. But for you, man, so I get the vibe, like, just between talking to you before and now doing the recording. And I want to give you the chance to defend it in case you're wrong. But I just want to hear you out. But I almost get the vibe that, like, you didn't enjoy this film as much, and it wouldn't normally be a big deal, save for the fact that everyone else is treating this like it's the second coming type of thing. Like, it's a religious experience, and it feels weird, right?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I told Josh this yesterday. I said, you know, if you guys know Josh well enough, you know that Josh really kind of gets an aversion to extreme hype. If everybody's like, oh my God, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, you know, then Josh is like, I got to step away from that shit and reevaluate later.
I love that other people are excited, though.
But it's just that's just a part of your personality, where if everybody is just, oh, you know, they're just hyping out, going crazy over one thing, it's almost like Josh feels like he's in a room with 10,000 people and he needs to step into a room to get a breather. And so I told Josh last night, I'm like, you know, I'm a little bit like you in that regard, but I'm still quite a bit different. I'm fully willing to step into that room with 10,000 people and just geek out with everyone else. So I walked into this movie fully ready to just be like, yeah, Dune Part 2, one of my favorite movies of all time. You know, I liked it even better than the first. It's going in the top 5. I love it. You know, holy shit, I'm going to go buy a new Funko Pop. And, but that, so like, I was willing to do that. Like, I don't feel like, I don't have Josh's problem of aversion when something, you know, is so hyped beyond ridiculousness. I'm sure they can
sense it here in this episode too with what I've said.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe even me too. Like, even though I'm not as much like that as you, but like I was willing to fall on my sword and just join the mainstream crowd and go, yeah, Dune's amazing. But I was like, awesome. You know, I just didn't feel that way. I was just like, it was a great movie, just like the first one. But I'm just like, you know, there comes a point where all of my whatever level of highbrow thinking I have, whatever level it is, of self-evaluation, of critical thinking, of appreciating high art, of trying to see outside the box, there comes a point where I just say, you know what? I just want to have fun. I just want to relax. I could have something interesting. Josh is going to laugh that I bring this up. Josh was half kidding when he said this, but I think it was really good. Josh goes, part of me just wants to see Madame Web instead. And for those of you that don't know, Madame Web is this horrendous movie, one of the worst movies ever, apparently, that is it's a spinoff of Sony's Spider-Man universe following a character called Madame Web. And it's basically become the joke of the internet. It's just the movie's so awful, you almost need to see it because it's crazy how awful they were able to make it. It's almost like they tried. And there's a sense that when Josh said that, he's like, oh, I'd almost rather see Madame Web. I'm like, yeah, kind of, you know, like it's almost like... I would like to, because if I went and saw Madame Web, I'd be able to go, okay, I'm just going to sit back, no expectations, ready to make fun of this thing, get some popcorn, have a good time.
Sure.
And there's just this weight, like I'm pulling behind me like an anchor on a ship when I go to see Dune. It's like, you're walking into this religious experience. You're walking into one of the best films ever made. You need to sit there. You need to take it in. You need to be ready. Mm-hmm. And... don't miss anything, and don't be disappointed. And when you leave, make sure you stand up and you shout from the rooftops how good it is. And I just didn't feel that way. I was just like, you know, it's
well
good,
said,
but
Brian,
you know,
well said.
I just
that is
just
kind
don't.
Of the notion.
Yeah, and I was like, I just don't feel that way, and I don't want to. I don't want to feel. Not that anybody I really know. If I can picture it, I'd picture like back when I was on Twitter. Like, I don't want to feel pressured into saying this is one of the best movies ever. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want, Josh, would you say this is one of the best movies ever made? I wouldn't.
It's just too soon to say that. Yeah. I'm not saying it's not possible that I could feel that way. It's just too soon for me to make any claim either way.
But why can't it just be a movie? You know what I mean? It was just a movie. It was a movie that was well done. I liked it. I had a good time. I'll see the third. I'll probably buy tickets to the third. I will buy the second one when it comes out because I have the first and I want to have them and I want to rewatch it. But it just it's weird, right? A movie that's good that we both give a 4 out of 5, we have to spend so much time talking it down because the ego of the film and the audience surrounding it has been inflated to such high degrees that we have to bring it down to an earthly level and just talk about it.
That's the takeaway I hope people have with this episode, at least, is if someone out there has gone to see this movie and they're kind of maybe feeling similar, like, I didn't get it as much, or I don't see why there's... like, hey, I'm not interested in going to see the movie, but I'll listen to the episode because I like you guys, which, thank you, if they're out there. But, you know, it's nice to offer a different side of the coin as opposed to just, one of the greatest things, my life will never be the same, everything's downhill from here on out, baby. You know, it's like, but... you know, and I think I enjoy fish out of water narratives in anything. When a newcomer learns the ways of someone else. And I know a lot of people, you know, the trope is typically like white savior stuff. And I understand that being there and that being a valid criticism for a lot of things. I just enjoy it in any culture when someone else gets to learn someone else's ways and stuff like that. And like it was almost kind of like when I watched Prince of Egypt earlier this year. And just to see Moses kind of get the other side of the coin, you know, with stuff of that life, you know, of just the slaves and everything like that. It was just fascinating. So I always like that type of journey that characters go through, that trope, I guess. But and you get that with Dune. So I think that's part of what I like about Paul's journey. But I also understand that, you know, a lot of people are in such dire straits with how cinema has gone. Especially with so many films failing last year at the box office, just feeling, you know, not promoted super well, or even with something like Madame Web, where it's like, who wrote this? Who wanted this? You know, there's a lot of clear signs to see where Sony didn't even feel confident. You can see Dakota Johnson even promoting it kind of seemed like, she didn't really want to be there, maybe. You know, I mean, so I understand where something like this, the movie itself, feels like it's saving us. For those who want to see movies continue and to see filmmakers get to tell the stories they want to tell the way they want to tell them. I'm behind all that stuff. I still loved it. I still loved it as a complete story. I mean, both films, I can see it being a masterpiece someday for many people. I just can't say it myself yet because I need time to think about it more. And the reason why I like to do that is the same reason I love having conversations with Brian, because when we talk about these things, especially Star Wars lately, we just Like, we're just breaking stuff down. It's almost like therapy and just assessing where we're at on things. Why we don't like something or why we love something rather than just I love it or I hate it.
And maybe the reason we're having this kind of conversation is because it was amped up to be a transcendent religious experience. I think that's
why. Yeah.
You know, like the hype was just unprecedented levels.
It's like I see all those like reviews I read earlier. I see where everyone feels that way. I can see where they're coming from. Do I necessarily feel the same? No. Do I still think it's very good and phenomenal as two films, as telling a complete story? Absolutely. Is it something I want to rewatch all the time? No. It's more of a deeper movie that requires a lot out of you as opposed to going to see Madame Web, where I can either be just roast it the whole time or go turn my brain off and just be like, well, that's certainly a movie. I saw a movie.
And can something just be said for fun, right? Because I feel like when you get in these like highbrow critical circles of movies, it's almost like fun is the trigger word. You can't have fun, right?
That's like, what I'm saying when I said the Metropolis shit. Like, some people are so high art, it gets to a level of pretentiousness that like you can't just enjoy movies. And if you're someone that like wants to go see a blockbuster, you know, then it's like, you know, you just get disregarded. And there's nothing wrong with that. I enjoy all sides of movies.
I personally enjoy The Hobbit, The Battle of Five Armies more than either of these Dune movies. And it's nowhere near as good, objectively, but...
Someone's going, oh!
I have a lot more fun with it, right? And that's I'm not gonna pretend that I enjoyed watching Dune more than Battle of Five Armies just because that's the highbrow or critical or smart thing to say. I appreciate that these movies are far better, but, like, if you ask me to give up Dune or give up Battle of Five Armies, you can take Dune. Like, I will watch Battle of Five Armies twice a year. You know, I have fun with it. I enjoy it. I love
that. Do you feel like there's a part of you that almost feels like you have to defend that, though?
Yeah, for sure. Because that's just, well, that's the thing is you have two extremes, right? You have the extreme we've talked about most of this episode, which is like the highbrow critic kind of viewpoint.
Yeah.
And then you have like your, you know, the other extreme side, which gets lambasted all the time, which is like your country bumpkin kind of mainstream going, you know, I saw, somebody in your family that goes and sees the new Transformers and they're like, oh, that was a 5 out of 5. It was amazing. You're like, what's your favorite part? And you're like, man, when that truck blew up, it was amazing. And it's like, you talk to those people and you're like, this sounds really pretentious, but you talk to those people and you can acknowledge that they are just on a completely different plane of understanding than you are, to where you don't even try to break that down. You just go, that's awesome, man. You know, I'm glad you love the explosions because you don't, it sounds pretentious as hell, but you can just tell they're not in the same headspace as you. So like, why try to tell them like, oh, well, Transformers was lacking substance.
No, what I understand. And there's also the notion that like, if that person enjoyed it, you don't want to come in there and like you said, and invoke pretentiousness.
It's entertainment.
Yeah. And you just want them to have fun. Like at the end of the day, like Jeff loved the movie. He had a couple criticisms that were similar to mine. I feel like I align with his, he had with mine on this movie. But like at the end of the day, he's a huge fan of this stuff. And for example, we sat in my car afterward, he, Irwin, and I, and talked for an hour and a half. And we went from talking about that movie to Marvel stuff. Jeff loves X-Men 3. Most people consider that to be the worst in that trilogy. But he likes it. And I thought, you know, like, and I offered my thoughts, you know, of why I didn't like it. But I thought at the end of the day, I don't want to pee-pee-poo-poo on his love of that. Because that's, for him, that's awesome. He gets a lot out of it. He sees a different movie than what I do when I watch it. And even though I feel this way or that way, I don't want to shit all over someone else's. It's just when I see someone that's pretentious, and that's when it comes to movies, that's when I don't sort of vibe or gel with those sorts of people. And sometimes when I do see a lot of hype for something, I have to kind of distance myself to sort of be to check myself, because I've had moments of where I followed something like Cyberpunk 2077 Master Chief Collection. And I just followed that and just lived the hype like it was an everyday thing. And then it came out and it was, whew. And I just, it's me at my age of being 35. I'll be 36 this year. I'm closer to my 40s. And I'm just thinking like, I'm not getting up to a point where I'm thinking like, I'm too old for that. Not at all. I just feel that, you know, as I get older, I want to experience a lot of different things, not just one thing over a long sustained period of time. And, But I get where other people are at in their different lives, and I don't want to pee pee poop on that. It's really just specifically the pretentious people that get a little bit highbrow, high art. And like, for example, the last thing I'll say is just on this at least, is that with something like this movie, sometimes people will take a movie like this of this quality or something, I don't know, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and use movies like that to better pee-pee-poo-poo on blockbuster movies or just something else, rather than just say, hey, it's a good
movie.
They're
going for two different things.
Yeah, and I kind of enjoy all different types of movies for what they are and, you know, the different vibes, and I don't want to use one to descend another or use another to elevate this one. You know, like, Marvel sucks so bad, here's my rant, and here's why Dune 2 is such a savior to cinema and why it's gonna, Denny's gonna save theaters and all that. Like, I understand those conversations. I don't want to bash one thing in order to lift another, same way I wouldn't want to do that with a person.
Well, two words of caution I want to say before we wrap up and get out of here is, one, I want you all who are listening to know that, you know, despite all of our criticisms, we're not, I'll speak for myself especially, we're not infallible to this. I'm playing Rebirth, Final Fantasy Rebirth right now. Super hyped game, everybody want to play. I'm playing it and feeling like it's one of the best video games ever played, which is right there with that.
That's awesome, Ryan.
That's right there with that hype, like, hyperbolic mentality. Like, I haven't put paper to pen on it, but, like...
But that's awesome,
it
though,
just,
man.
It just feels like...
Yeah.
It just feels... It feels like a transcendent experience, Josh. So, it's not...
I like his eyes. You should have seen his eyes, guys.
It's not...
Wow.
Something that... Spice, it's not something that, like, we're infallible to. Like, I feel like I'm... definitely in that trap with Final Fantasy Rebirth right now.
Oh, yeah.
Another word of caution I would say is that if anybody we know gave this film a wants to give this film a 5, please continue to do so. You know in your head why you're giving it a 5. You know why you think it deserves it.
To me,
it.
If someone else says masterpiece, then it is. I'm not going to judge that person's way of thinking or how they approach movies and why they feel that way. To me, it isn't, but that's just my own thought. I'm not going to judge someone else for saying that.
Our conversation is more based around the fact that for many, including to a lesser degree myself, people were going into this film ready to put the 5 down on the paper without ever watching it. You know, that's the difference. So, but Josh, are you ready to go into, you got any final thoughts? You ready to go into the business?
No, you know, I'll just say a quick final thought, man. I do love this movie, and this movie really reminded me of why I enjoy Dune as a series as a whole, just the narrative stuff. And, you know, as I've seen more of that stuff, learned more about Dune, I really come to appreciate the inspirations George took for Star Wars. I see it, and I like it, and I like the cast in this. I feel like, you know, you have 4 or 5 stars in this that is just at a really their peak points in their careers almost, or at least getting to that point. You have Timothy Chalamet, who's on fire, Zendaya, who's on fire, Florence Pugh, who's on fire, Austin Butler, who's on fire, Anya Taylor-Joy, who's on fire. I mean, they have pretty much like the Avengers version of cinema in this movie. You know, they have like that lineup of up and coming stars who's going to be there for the long haul, it feels like. And then you have them filled out with stars like Josh Brolin and Javier Bardem, Christopher Walken, Rebecca Ferguson, and all these others, you know. And I just think how much I love that. And I love how well this is shot. And I love that this, for the things I criticize it for, is the same things I love it for. I love that it's different. I love that it's not a Madame Web. It's not, or in a better case, that it's not, I don't know, just a Disney movie. I've been on a huge Disney kick. It's not, it's different. It is elevated. And I don't mind that. And it's like when I rewatch the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I don't rewatch them all the time. It's like once every couple years, only because they demand a lot out of me. By the time I walk away, I'm so emotionally exhausted from the vulnerability that I gave myself over to with the experience that I'm like, I'm ready to go just watch something that's easy, like Bleach almost. And I love the Lord of the Rings films. They're some of my favorite, you know? But there's certain movies that I want to rewatch because I can turn my brain off, like a Happy Gilmore. I'll just put it on in the background, it'll play, and I turn my brain off, have a good time, occasionally look at it. But then there's movies like Dune where it's like, well, I'm going to want to pay attention to this
movie. You feel the weight.
But I feel the weight, so I'm
Which
only going to watch
what
this
we
every
want,
so
that's,
often.
That's what this movie is.
I appreciate all different types of movies. I really
It's
do.
A really good movie.
It's what I
and
love.
Any way you spin Dune Part 2, it's a really good movie.
I went in thinking like, you know, my excitement's kind of dimming a bit. I came out of it like, oh, yeah, that is why I like Dune a lot. So, but at the same time, I see everyone's criticisms, and I just sit somewhere in the middle, and I don't want to, again, I have met people out there who felt like they couldn't enjoy anything or they had to approach it with a negative mindset first. I never want to be that person. I love that people enjoy things. I never want to be a killjoy because I hate that. There's always that notion too of like, it's not as good as it used to be, and I want to break that cycle. So I like that if people come out of this and they are saying it's one of the best experiences they've ever had, I just want to know why. Like, go further. Tell me more about that. And if you hated it, go further. Tell me why. Was it, was it impacted by the hype this had, or was it just something in the movie itself it did? I just like hearing people. I don't want to always hear myself talk. I don't like to listen to these podcast episodes often because I don't like to hear myself talk or what I say. I would rather listen to Brian the whole time and, hit that button, that skip button to stop hearing myself talk. So I just want to listen to other people. And that's what I love about movies. It's just getting other people's opinions and stuff. And it's just, it really falls. There's just a specific category of people, of pretentious people. And they don't really give you anything else other than it's amazing. I've never seen anything like this, and I'll likely never see anything like this again. And I'm just like, okay. You're done playing with your dick. Like, can we actually talk about the movie? Can you tell me what you liked about it? Can you tell me what you didn't like? Was there anything? Or was it just a perfect movie? It was perfect. Why was it perfect? Because visionary. We don't get movies like this anymore. It's just spectacle and awe and wonder. Okay. Well, if 10 other movies did that, what does this do that differentiates it? Give me more. So I just want a more nuanced discussion. Yep. That's all. But I'm pee-pee and poo-poo in this episode, and I apologize for that. But I did like the movie. I liked it too.
I mean, I did like it too, and I walked out of it, still glad I saw it, and I look forward to a reevaluation of it when I watch it again. I know when it comes out on 4K, I'm going to want to own it. I know that for sure.
Are you still doing it?
Huh? Yeah, still doing it. There you go. But yeah, it was a good time and a good movie, guys. I know that the there's a damper over this episode that probably makes that final statement of us both being like it was good and we enjoyed it and liked it feel incredulous. I don't know if that's the right word. But I do think it's a matter of this movie has been inflated so high into the clouds that me and Josh had to bring it back down to earth just to get on topic. That's kind of where we're at. So I'm ready to go into the end when you're ready, Josh.
Okay. I think
go ahead, say more if you want.
I know we want to get to some other stuff. We've been putting out some long episodes. We want to get to some other stuff. And I appreciate you for saying that. It's going to sound like we pat ourselves on the back, but I think you and I both, especially doing the podcast over the years, even when it was Halo, we didn't want to you see the commentary out there. So it's like, for example, when everyone was really hateful on a lot of Halo stuff, they die on the shader controversy or something. There's that part of us that's like, whoa, we got to step outside of the box. Does this bother us? And just reevaluate where we feel, because you see that where the one specific crowd is, and you just kind of want to see, before you could just completely throw yourself into that crowd to be part of the conversation. Do I agree with this crowd? Do I feel differently? And it's like, case in point with this, it's like, we were interested to see this movie, as a lot of people were, but we come out of it having different feelings, and then you feel like you almost have to defend it because everyone else is championing it, not just as a good movie, but as one of the best ever made. And then it just almost makes you reevaluate, well, what's wrong with me? And you think, yeah. You almost feel like, yeah, you really have to defend it. And it's not that you're trying to be this combative person that's like, well, I didn't like it. I saw something that no one else did. It's not that you're trying to be that guy. It's just you just feel a certain way. And you're trying to, I think, process just why you don't feel it. Why you're not only not enjoying it as much as the ratings indicate, but also why are you not having this religious experience that everyone else is having? And it's just trying to process that. But again, hopefully people listening to this that feel somewhat similar feel like they, feel represented in this episode. And for other people that love it, just know that, I had a great time with it and I loved it. So I align with more with what, the vibes that Brian has. I did still have an amazing experience and liked it a lot.
Yeah,
sorry for the ramble, Josh. Brian.
I'm gonna go ahead and go into our patrons, guys. I just want to say before I go into our patrons, I just want to thank you guys deeply for those that are supporting us on Patreon, because I'm trying to make this quick because nobody likes to hear this pitch, but Josh and I have felt discouraged over the last couple months because the patron just kind of keeps dwindling, and when we navigated away from Halo, our listenership dwindled, and we expected that was intentional. But the patron dwindles, and I think there's an element of where we have no intent of ever quitting the podcast, and we do this because it's fun. But there is a very much a reality to, as the patron continues to fall, it just feels more and more it's hard to not feel less appreciated, which that's where I hate to say that because I don't want this to feel like a guilt trip. Like, here's what I'll say immediately. If you've ever given a single dollar, you've went above and beyond. All we ask of anyone is that you listen to the podcast. So you're meeting us where we want just by listening. If you've ever given a dollar, it's above and beyond. And then there's some of you out there that have given so much that if you're not giving anymore, I wouldn't want you to come back and give again, like if you, because you've just done so much for us already. And there's nobody that I would want to go to the patron who doesn't feel inclined to. And I don't think anyone here should feel that they need to. But I would say that if it's something you've ever considered doing, but haven't, and you wonder if it's even worth doing, even if it's a dollar, it absolutely is to us. It would make our whole day for a buck, because it, especially
we talk about it every time. We really do. The amount of space the patrons take up in our minds and our day to day conversations is a lot. It really
is. it kind of feels like the patron represents. It's like this is like a little too much, but like it's like our life's work, right? Like, I mean, outside of like doing jobs, like this is Josh and I's passion brought to content. So our life's work is the payoff is represented by the patron, and as it continues to dwindle, it's kind of discouraging. But yeah, once again, it's not to make anyone feel like they should give or feel any kind of guilt. And like I said, if you've already gave even a dollar, you've already went above and beyond, don't do any more.
We're very appreciative for those that have stuck with us that still choose to sign up. And that means a lot to us because, you know, when you see the numbers that you see, but you don't necessarily, you know, have every person telling you, you know, verbally, like, hey, this is what I liked or I enjoyed this or something. You're just seeing the stats and you're seeing the patron stuff. You know, it's nice to you do get a better sense of where people are at when you see patrons, you know, of what how they're enjoying stuff, how they're
feeling. Well, when you go month to month, especially where like the last month, Josh and I put in 3 to 4 times the amount of recording hours and editing to get more content, more beefier episodes and stuff out. And then to see like the patron like go down $50, go down $100, it's hard to not feel like you're being something's being taken away for doing more, which is the wrong way to look at it. But it's just you look at the stats, you look at that stuff. So we appreciate you guys that are continuing to give or have given in the past, and we appreciate you if you just listen and haven't gave and won't give, because that's the main thing is you showed up to listen. Mm-hmm. But we definitely would appreciate that. And you know, we don't know what the future holds, right? So if there's a future where Josh is super busy and I'm super busy, you know, I've got a second kid and Josh has his first, and the patron's like $43, then it might just be, it would be easier to say, hey, Josh, maybe, you know, it's been 7 years, it's been 8, maybe it's ran its course, maybe we dip out now. And I think there's I've listened to many podcasts where people say, oh, well, the people that are here on every episode and the people that are giving to the patron are the people that are guaranteeing we'll never quit this. Cause how could we, you know? And I feel like that's the truth here. Like we're never going to want to give this up as long as there's support. So that's a long way of saying that, but we appreciate you guys, from listeners to people who've given in the past, you're still giving, who, you know, you never give it at all. It's fine. But this is, I would hope that anybody who listens to this podcast often enough knows Josh and I to know that we do not give this spiel that often. We do not talk about this that often. This isn't something we do all the time where it's like, I can't believe you guys are talking about the patron again. You can take 300 episodes, and I'm not sure we've ever done this kind of rant more than 3 times in 300 episodes. So that's all I have to say on that, and I will go over to the patrons that are supporting us. Josh, are you ready? Are you sure?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no. Okay. I appreciate all the patrons. I echo everything you said. It is disheartening, but to see that, you know, some of that go down, but at the same time, the ones that stick there mean a lot, and that really is our window into feedback outside of what we see in the Discord.
Absolutely, and once again, to reiterate, some people, like, on one hand, we appreciate everyone the same, but on the other hand, when you have somebody who's, you know, over the years given over $1,000, $2,000, and are still, you have to say,
crazy.
You have to say, like, it's insane. There's no words for that. Like, thank you so much.
And, no,
like,
words.
That's no not words. Expected of anyone, but like, just know it does not go unnoticed. We see
no,
that
we really do. I'm serious.
Don't, like, take it for granted.
I talk with Brian sometimes on drives when I'm running errands or on a treadmill or he's at work sneaking his phone, and we will talk about, you know, we're having a regular conversation. All of a sudden, it's like, rising from the ashes, born anew. You know, yeah. And that a lot of those inside jokes we have with patron names, and, you know, good jokes, you know, not bad ones. But, yeah, I mean, that stuff just, and just everyone, you know, when someone drops, we're crestfallen, you know, when we see that someone left or, you know, when we see that someone signs up.
But if we get one new person who gives us a buck, Josh will call me and be like, you see that, Brian? Did you see that? Did you see Timmy011 just gave us $1?
It really means a lot, yeah.
And I'm like, Josh, no, I didn't. Are you serious? He's like, yeah, man, check it. I'm like, holy shit, we got a buck. The taxes and the fees come out, we'll be able to get 1/4 of a McDouble, but we're happy.
It's not even the money. It really is just seeing that someone likes us that
it's
much.
Somewhat
they
the
throw
money,
that
Josh,
support.
For sure.
I don't know. It hasn't been for
I'll
me
speak for myself. It's somewhat okay. The money.
I think it's just the flattery. It's just the, I mean, that's the weight of my heart, like for some
it
people.
Feels
it's
like,
food.
It feels like, you know, the payment for the work, you know.
Yeah. It's validating to see someone sign up, and I'm like, man, they must really like us to want to show that support. And it just, that's on a different level. And that just means a lot because I'm sometimes, you know, I get self-conscious of myself and I'm like, am I talking too much? Am I making sense? Am I spieling? Am I blah, blah, blah? And then you see, you know, people come in there and drop that support. And I'm like, damn, they like us. Maybe I should look at myself better. You know, it's a good feeling.
We're sorry, guys, for going on for so long.
Yeah, let's get we going, Brian. Let's get going and get out of here.
All right.
We love
Speaking
you,
Speaking of our patron supporters, here is our current patron supporters. Are you ready, Josh?
Yes, let's do it.
We have, I'm not going to say his last name right, we have Jordan Fufer, I'm sorry. Thank you very much for your support. We have Darren Trickster, Jacob Nyrene, Death Ghost, a.k.a. Ken, Installation 00, Boba's Feet, Diente Ombre, Wesley Types, Sparkies, Hocus Locust, William Green, Albino, I Irving TV, AJ's Dank, Ian Rucker, DeRuck? Josh says.
Fuck?
There it is. He's a rebel. He's a saint.
Shin Rebel.
We have Ascending from the Ashes, born anew.
There it is.
The Irish Phoenix himself. We have not the Dab, but the Dav. Jared Hartley, Small Print TV, Aaron, Rodan, Butter My Waffles, Nerva, ACDC Outlaw, Anthony Dorsey, Chris Greco, Mega Greco, if you see my Greco, it's Chris Greco. Josh says, do it one more time. I say, no problem. I'll do it for the patrons. Chris Greco, Mega Greco, if you see my Greco, it's Chris Greco. Love that, dude. Thank you so much. Tony, we appreciate you so much for your support. Mustard Chief, Josh, you know what was missing in Dune?
What's that?
Those giant worms did not have a giant mustache like Ares 0430 does, but I sure wish they did.
Yeah, I figured that's where you were going with that.
Probably. Needed. Montana Menace, Green Plumber, Joshy Big Boy, Dustin Mondre, Anthony Nicolosi, Corey Hanks, Preyonshu, MH Cosplay, dropping in from the ceiling with that ODST Chili Drop Pod. Ian Big Dog.
I think he's
Hills.
Dropping in on the Spice Melange on Arrakis, and he's like, oh shit, I'm on the wrong planet, bro.
He probably jumps in like a badass thinking he's going to land and have this awesome landing, but he just goes right into the worm's throat. He's dead, gone.
No, Mikey would survive it. He'd be like blasting out of there.
He'd come out like the Mandalorian, like Boba Fett.
Yeah, bro. Yeah. He would. That's Mikey, man.
Boba Fett. Awesome. We have the spiciest meme lord, Photon, the OG Halo podcaster, Dust Storm, and the man who saw Justice League and knew it needed more. Josh, who is it?
That's Matthew Salvatore.
He did. He knew it needed more, so much so that they rebooted the whole damn franchise. But guys, that's it for the episode. Josh, you got any closing statements? Me and Josh, we always do this. We say, we're going to give them a 3-hour episode. We give them a 3.5. We're going to give them a 1-hour episode. We're going to give them, then we end up giving them 1.5. We can't ever stick to our word. So you got any final thoughts, Josh, before we get out of here?
No, I had a fun time. We were clearly all over the place this episode, but I still had a good time. Brian, I'll just switch it over to you. What is on the agenda next? Because I know we would like to do a Final Fantasy episode, but we do want to come back with the Star Wars original trilogy and talk about that too. What do you think we're doing next, man, for those
still listening? Sure, like a Monday or Tuesday next week, or maybe you'll want to do it later, but sometime next week I think we'll just go right into Star Wars original trilogy. Final Fantasy, we're probably going to do that with Wes and Joe.
Looking
Joe only just Joe only just beat Remake, and Wes just had a kid, so
is he jumping right in
to that, so.
Like,
he's gonna go back to original. He's gonna go back to Final Fantasy original is what he said.
Oh, and then he's gonna circle back to Rebirth.
No, then he's gonna go to Crisis Core, then he's gonna watch Advent.
Oh, he's going on then four.
He's doing the whole tour.
Okay, so very cool.
He's getting that Italian tour at the Olive Garden.
I've been there once. I have no idea what that.
Yeah, they got this thing called the Tour of Italy. That's what I get when I go there.
Is that a real thing, Brian?
Yeah, Tour of Italy, at Olive Garden. Yeah, I'm not joking. So, but all
You're
right,
over
guys,
here going to classy places like Olive Garden. I'm going to Pizza Ranch.
Rarely, but sometimes I get that Tour of Italy, and then I go right back to, you know, Little Caesars. So, But and every time I get Little Caesars, I always say, "Do you remember me, Josh?" I always say, "Josh, you want to get a little bit of that Little Caesar my heart?" Little Caesar my heart.
I don't remember that, but I believe.
Yeah, yeah, that's what we say, me and my brothers and stuff.
Take another Little Caesar my heart now, baby.
Oh, that's pretty good. All right, guys. Well, we love you so much. We would love to hear your thoughts on Dune, either with spoilers or without. Part one or part two, whenever you can, in the Discord. You can email us a voice clip, whatever you want to do. We'd love to hear about it. It was a great movie. We had a good time. And
did you, Brian?
I did, actually. I mean, even though I still had a good time. A little boring.
I'm just
parts,
joshing
but,
you.
I had
sorry
a good time.
To doon it again.
But yeah, maybe in 3 years we'll be doing a podcast on Dune Messiah or whatever the, or maybe part three, whatever
Dune
they want to call
still
it.
Still doing it.
Doing it again. So, all right, guys, we love you. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, keep it sacred.